"You've finished everything," says the stewardess when she picks up the trays. She seems genuinely surprised. I smile up at her. This was an educational lunch. "Oh," she says, looking slightly bewildered. "I'm glad." Piling the trays onto her cart, she adds, "People don't usually say that." Then she pushes off quickly, as if she's afraid that I will attempt to engage in further discussion of the food. But food is the farthest thing from my mind. I am considering my next plan of action. One of the primary requisites of a good restaurant critic is the ability to be anonymous. Clearly, I am going to have to do something. But what? Flying east, it takes 4.5 hours to go from LAX to JFK. It is just long enough. By the time we land, I have figured the whole thing out. "This is Warren Hoag," announced a self-satisfied voice when I picked up the phone, assistant managing editor of the New York Times. He proclaimed it proudly, as if faint trumpets were sounding off in the background. "Yes," I said, hoping my tone conveyed more interest than I was actually feeling. It was 2 months before that fateful trip to New York, and I was staring across the sad, low landscape of downtown Los Angeles, wondering how to make Easter more exciting. Holidays are a restaurant critic's nightmare, and this one, with its perennially boring brunches featuring ham or lamb, is particularly gruesome. The copy I had just produced was deadly. "I suppose you've heard that our restaurant critic, Brian Miller, has decided to leave the job," the voice continued. This bland assurance that the eyes of the entire world were focused on Times Square was so irritating that I lied. "No," I said, "I hadn't heard that." The voice ignored this. "I was thinking," it continued smoothly, "that it can't be much fun for you, being a restaurant critic in the middle of a recession." I dropped Easter. He had captured my attention. The 80s hit Los Angeles like the month of March. They came roaring in, then tiptoed sheepishly out as the money stopped and the good times ended. It all happened so fast. First, the aerospace industry shut its doors and the city slumped into depression. Then the cops beat Rodney King on the nightly news, exposing the racism that had been hiding behind the prosperity. The anger simmering just below the surface erupted into a furious boil. Riots were followed by floods and then fires, which spilled out across the city in an almost biblical manner. When the tide of disasters finally receded, the city it left behind was thin, brittle, dangerous, and poor. The very rich retreated into their golden communities, into Bel Air, the Palisades, and Beverly Hills, locking the gates behind them. The valleys on the far side of the mountains swelled with fleeing people. Those of us left in Los Angeles huddled in our houses, haunted by memories of snipers shooting from freeway overpasses, looters setting fires that came creeping inexorably into our neighborhoods, contorted faces throwing rocks. Staying home seemed the safest option, and the great Los Angeles restaurant boom came screeching to a halt. "New York is the center of the American restaurant world." The man's sinuous voice wormed its way into my ear, and I imagined him holding out an enormous, bright red apple. I was not about to bite. "I have a job, thank you," I said crisply. "I love working at the Los Angeles Times. I'm not looking to move." But he wouldn't take no for an answer, I told my husband when I got home. When I told him I was going to be in New York in a couple of weeks for the James Beard Awards, he made me agree to meet him for coffee. "I'd love to leave L.A., Michael said wistfully. "Don't even think about it," I warned him. "It's not an interview. It's just coffee. I'll only be there 15 minutes. I can't resist the chance to see the Times offices, but I have no interest in working there." "Of course not," said Michael. "Why on earth would you want to work at the best paper in the world?" I landed in New York to find the weather itself conspiring against me. It was one of those magical Manhattan springs. Fresh winds were blowing gently across the island, so that each time I inhaled, I breathed in the faint salt smell of the ocean. Daffodils and tulips nodded from every corner. Lilacs and apple blossoms danced through the parks. On the avenues, tables and chairs edged slyly onto sidewalks, promising summer. The sun poured from the sky like honey, and people threw back their heads and drank it in.